Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Fabelito.
And we are Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like...
O sea, me tapo un ojo, me tapo el otro y nada que ver, güey.
¿Neta?
Ooh. Well, praise the Lord, we're here again.
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes, ¿cómo están todos?
I'm doing good. Eating this delicious sandwich that has a lot of Thanksgiving looking things, and I don't know what it is, but
you
it's
brought
amazing.
Us a sandwich today, and I Thanksgiving looking things.
Yeah.
Turkey, cheese, coleslaw,
and mayo, and orange mayo, and purple mayo.
A taste of America.
It's wonderful.
I feel like all my college years, all I did was eat sandwiches.
I don't eat sandwiches as much, but when I do, I really go for it. So this is a good one.
So what's new, Babelito? What have you done this week?
Nothing. School is over. I've been going back to my thesis. I am getting ready for my summer, and I'm going to a quinceañera in Juarez, so I'm looking forward to that.
Cool.
That would be cool if we can do a show from over there, but one day.
I don't know if we have the budget for that yet.
Oh, we'll find it.
What? Who's getting married? Who's getting
quinceañera?
Who's getting quinceañera?
my cousin's daughter. Her name is La Chelis.
La Chelis.
Hi, Chelis.
What up, girl?
You're listening.
Shout out to La Chelis.
She follows me on everything. She's awesome. I was just texting with her yesterday, and she was making sure I was going so we can go see the new Alice in Wonderland. So that's what's happening in my life. What's going on with you?
Oh my gosh! Thank you for asking. I've just been busy.
Yes,
I don't have a full time job right now, so I have to freelance, and I've been blessed. I just have like 6 jobs that I'm doing right now.
That's good.
One of them is food writing for a magazine, local magazine, and I'm doing a story on pupusas.
Oof.
So, bitch, I've been eating pupusas.
Do you get sick of them? You don't, right?
They're really heavy.
Yeah.
So before I would like grub on like 3 and be like super full and be fine. But now because I've been eating them for like every meal for the past, because I'm trying to find the best pupusas in Las Vegas. Oh, it's a lot. I get full really quick.
So are they deep fried? Is it like a deep fried gordita?
They're not deep fried. They're grilled. So they take the masa, they roll it up, they put the cheese. The revueltas are cheese, beans, chicharrón, and then they like flatten them like a tortilla, you know?
Because one of the things we eat in the north is kind of like that, but just dry.
Yeah.
They just put it in the comal, and then that's it. So it's kind of like, it's very similar to a northern style gordita.
Yeah.
But
it's like a pocket food. Yeah, cough into the mic. That's good.
Good.
Very professional. So speaking of pupusas and Central American restaurants,
whoop whoop.
A lot of these Salvadoran restaurants are also Guatemalan.
Yes.
And you know who else is Guatemalan?
Who?
I'm half Guatemalan, and my full-blooded Guatemalan brother is here today. What up, B?
Hello, hello, hello.
Introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Brandon Lima.
Yes. Where are you from?
Las Vegas, Nevada.
How old are you?
26 years old.
What's your sign?
Virgo.
What's your hobbies?
Music.
Music. All right. Listen, play. What do you do?
Play, listen.
Okay, nice. And he's also a movie expert. This motherfucker watches more movies than anybody I know.
Anybody else, yes.
And today we have him here because we're going to talk about one of his favorite movies, the 1988 movie, Stand and Deliver, featuring Edward James Olmos as Jaime Escalante.
I was going to say Pablo Escalante.
Who's Pablo Escalante?
He's an art historian, but anyway.
Yeah. So that movie also the star is Edward James Olmos. And also in the movie is Lou Diamond Phillips. It was like his second big movie after La Bamba, which that's going to be another episode. So
that performance by that dude
in La Bamba?
No way.
Oh,
and Stand and Deliver.
Oof.
Anyway, we'll
I wonder, dude, do you know they're coming out with a new Speedy Gonzalez movie?
I can't.
Do you think Edward James, I mean, do you think Lou Diamond Phillips is playing Speedy Gonzalez? Because that's what he sounded like in Stand and Deliver.
Man, it's 2016, people, come on. I can't. I refuse. Last.
What if they turn it around? What if Speedy Gonzalez is like, you know.
How can you turn around something like that? You just can't.
Middle class Chicano, like.
Nope.
He like started a food truck and is like doing fusion tacos.
I'm out. I am out.
So Brandon, what about Stand and Deliver? Why do you like that movie? What's cracking? What's going on? Talk. It's okay. Don't worry. There's only three people that listen to the show.
And they're all here right
now. Yeah. This is it. This is for us.
I don't know exactly why I like. I mean, it's like one of those like feel good movies, I guess. I don't know. Inspirational. Funny.
Yeah, it is pretty funny. And it always cracked me up that Edward James almost had that funny accent. But then when I started watching a bunch of YouTube videos of Jaime Escalante. And for some reason, I always thought he was Mexican, but he's Bolivian. Is a Bolivia.
Yes.
Right? And
which they let you know at the beginning of the movie.
How?
With the flutes.
Do, do, do.
Those flutes. Anywhere you hear those flutes, you know there's South Americans present. You hear them over here in Fremont Street, everywhere. But it's almost like that's the shout out.
Yeah.
And then that's it. You forget he's Bolivian. I think he mentions it once in the movie.
Yeah.
But then that's it, because the focus of the movie is the Chicano kids from East LA, from LA.
Yeah, so in the 1970s, Jaime Escalante moved to the States, did all these odd jobs, and then eventually, I think in like 74, he started teaching at Garfield High School in Los Angeles. And he started an algebra program with like 12 kids, and then eventually started an AP calculus program, right? So.
And the main one of the main goals to have that program established is for kids to graduate with college credits.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, super important.
So the movie came out in 1988, which was like 6 years after this event happened, right?
Yeah.
After the first AP calculus class took the advanced placement test.
And they passed all of them?
And all 18 kids passed. They all got the same question wrong.
In the same score, basically.
In the same score. So then they were accused of cheating on the test. So that's what that's the events at the movie.
Which is one of the most memorable lines for me in the movie. When he says, if this would have been Beverly Hills High, this would have never been questioned. And that's when I was like, oof.
Yeah,
it's very interesting, and they don't play a lot with this idea of difference of at least in the dialogue. But once in a while, they remind you that this is exactly why this happened. But anyway, they have them take the test a second time, and by the second time they take it, they all passed again. But not only they passed, they even they do much better than that. And it's just inspiring to see. And also, you were mentioning earlier that towards the end of the movie, when you see that this program keep getting better and better, and it went from 18 students to, what is it, 72 or 78 students by...
Yeah, 78.
By 1888, by 1980-something, yeah. It's just, you don't see that every day. You don't hear news like that every day. And it's just, I understand why you guys watch it a lot.
I feel like we watched that movie over and over and over again, just because it was like, it was brown people in a movie, right? Mm-hmm. And like, there's not that many of them, right? We got La Bamba and we got Stand and Deliver. I mean, back in the 80s, right? And then all these kind of hokey movies too that came. So Brandon, let's talk about the movie. Let's start at the very beginning, right? It's like a close-up of the LA River. And then that flute music that Emmanuel was talking about starts playing. So you just see the water, which is like very symbolic and like nature, you know, and then it pulls out and it's the concrete LA River with those iconic bridges, right? Yeah, so you immediately know where you are. Oh yeah, in the first part of the movie, like all these, they're going down East LA, I think, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
but it makes you,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, but you see, but that's how a lot of cities in the United States look, which I was thinking about. You
but have, what, let's describe
you
it.
You have the Norteño band walking from one yeah. bar to the other.
All these murals, correct. Very colorful, like old repurposed buildings, you know, like 50s buildings now are like llanteras and piñata shops and restaurants.
You see tiendas de discos and I don't know, a lot of stuff that it's not there anymore. But I remember when I was like 18, 17, we went to, I think it's Calle 26 yeah. or 23, I don't remember, in Chicago. As soon as we turned the corner and we were there, I felt like I was in Juarez. It just,
yeah.
it was all brown people and brown murals and Bancos de Mexico. And it was culture shock, even though it was my own culture, because I didn't expect that to see in Chicago. But you see it in L.A., you see it here in Las Vegas. But
yeah, and I think that's, I mean, it sets the tone, right? It like yes. lets the audience know exactly where it is, mm-hmm. which I think is cool. And then also, but then also, I mean, now when I watch stuff, I always think, did they make this for us or did they make this for white people?
Yeah.
Right? So like, when you see all that imagery, mm-hmm. to us it's familiar, and to me it was like nostalgic seeing that because that's it was right. made in the 80s, you know?
Correct.
But at the same time, is it like exoticizing the person from East LA?
Yeah, from that area
like,
of town.
Like even when he first goes in to check in at the school, there's like graffiti all over the walls, mm-hmm. like in the principal's, you think there's going to be graffiti in the principal's office? Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of ridiculous. But, you know, it's just they want to show you a before and after,
yeah,
you know, of what's going on.
I'm curious about, because this movie seems to be very, every 20 years there seems to be a renaissance of cultural stuff that happened 20 years before.
Yeah.
So right now it's all about the 90s, because my little sister Bianca, she loves the
movie. Shout out to Bianca.
JJ as well. They love this movie, and I wondered if it's just a cycle thing that every 20 years we try to recuperate what happened on those decades, or it's always been around and I'm just never really paid attention before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm wondering, Brandon, if you and your like is it a common thing with your friends, or you're the only one who watches this movie?
No, all my friends, we all pretty much have like the same taste in movies. We all seen that. Actually, they used to show, I don't know if they still show that movie in school. They show that a couple
Stand
times.
Stand and Deliver, yeah. right?
Yeah. Oh, sweet.
In English yeah. class. Yeah, I had a couple of friends, like Lou Diamond Phillips character.
Uh-huh. What's his name? Angel?
Angel, yeah. Angelica. I actually had a friend like exactly like him, you know what I mean? He yeah. was like kind of like the cholo
style. Did he have his dickies like up to his yeah, fucking chest?
Exactly, the net yeah. in his hair.
Kind of like the guy that would never show up to class, but he'll come in like halfway into it. But then he actually ended up actually like graduating too. He was like a real yeah. smart kid, but oh, he was cool. like a cholo, you know what I mean? But
yeah, yeah, like that character of like, I'm too cool for school, yeah, but yeah. secretly, you know, yeah. they love their grandmas and they're yeah. like really trying to do hard. No, for real. He loved his grandma, pobrecita. Y que asco, when she's at the fucking hospital and she's she like the fucking soco, like.
Wait, you guys call it soco?
Soco, so, yeah.
We call it gargajo, which is even worse.
Guatemalans have better words for stuff.
When you say soco yesterday, I was like, what the fuck is he talking about?
No, soco's like a loogie, yeah, like right? Loogie, yeah. yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm also excited to hang out with Brandon today because I've been hanging out with Emmanuel with Babelito for so long that I have a Mexican accent now when I talk.
Okay.
So now, but when I'm around you, I notice that I'm like.
Te sale lo guatemalteco.
Sí, fue la gran puta.
La chapín.
Ajá, mira vos, chico. No, that's Cuban. Whoa, whoa, don't go there.
So no. Wait, you don't think that character was exaggerated at all?
It was a little exaggerated.
When he comes in drunk at the award ceremony, like. Fine. He didn't really come in drunk for any of the other scenes, so I thought that was weird. And that's another thing that that I've read about the movie is that, you know, this guy comes in with that fingers guy, you know, mm-hmm. And the movie with the leader of the gang, basically, yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. And they don't even know their times tables.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what something that Jaime Escalante said is like, I never had a student that went from not learning his times tables to
doing calculus.
Doing AP, acing. He got a 5, the highest score. Mm-hmm. On the Angel did.
Oh,
on the
Angel,
AP,
yeah. He
on the
did,
AP
yeah,
calculus
yeah,
test,
he
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like, it's very romanticized. But Escalante says that it's, you know, 90%, you know, truth, and then 10% drama, he
yeah,
says.
Yeah, and we saw that when we were watching it together, when they get pulled over by the police, which uh-huh. also was very romanticized because it was, you know, it was very safe with the background of those
oh, you remember that part?
Downtown
where
LA bridges.
Him and Fingers gets pulled over by the cops because he like...
Oh, yeah, he like flicks a cigarette to the woman cop.
Okay.
If that would have happened today...
In the 1980s...
We would have yeah. beat down...
They would have been a fucking pulp. Yeah. Like, they would have just yeah. been a bag of bones yeah. on the side yeah. of the street. Yeah. Like, they were just like... They gave him a ticket. Yeah, a ticket, please. You think that motherfucker...
Uh-uh. And I like how they go from Sunset Boulevard uh-huh. and they are pulled over and the next thing you see, they're in downtown LA.
They're under a fucking freeway
yes.
with like... Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
With all the palm trees lit up and...
That scene reminded me of West Side Story, actually. Like mm-hmm. this, like the set or something.
It's almost like you need that iconography for people that may be a little bit familiar with Chicano culture, but not so much. So maybe you're right. Maybe
yeah.
those type of backgrounds reminded, again, white audience or brown audience of where... all of this stuff is supposed to be coming
yeah.
from. But one important thing, one important detail about this idea of romanticizing, it's the fact that Escalante worked his ass off, and not just
yeah.
for 1 year. I read an article from 2010 in NPR, and in All Things Considered, and they talk about this, that it took him eight years to put together this program where he was able to train students to pass this test in one single year.
Wow.
And I think that's the most important aspect of the movie that they live out, because, I don't know, it creates, in a way, it could create negative expectations. Like, I'm not going to do anything for 3 years, and I'm going to be a senior, and then I'm going to work for a year, and then boom,
yeah.
I'm going to have a great job because I'm an expert in calculus. So, and how does he say calculus?
What's calculus?
Oh, my God. That was a joke, though. That was a joke in the movie. Calculus. But then he says other shit in the movie. Okay, this is how you know. First by his name, Lou Diamond Phillips, that he's not Latino, but also the way that he pronounces shit. What does he say, Brandon?
That's the
no, remember he says other shit. I don't know. You know all the quotes.
Ponte trucha.
Puta madre.
He's Native American, right? He's not.
I think he's part Filipino, part Native American, and some sort of European. I think, like white.
I have no problem Native Americans representing Latinos
yeah.
in film, but I mean there's a lot of Chicanos and Latinos out there waiting for that part in the movie, so I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, but I mean he made it big as Richie Valens. It's like all white meet, you know.
Yeah.
Showbiz is white, right? So like, "Oh, Richie Valens, the Mexican dude. Come on." Like it doesn't matter. "Oh, and you can speak English? Okay, cool." Like
yeah, it's like he fits all the races.
Oh, Lord.
For the Hollywood mind, not
I'm trying to stay. My gut is to hate on Lou Diamond Phillips because
yeah.
he's not like Latino. You know what I mean? But that's also
not raza. Yeah,
not raza. But I don't want to be hypocritical either. Like Abuelita Roselia, our grandma is part Filipino. Did you know that?
No,
I just learned that at her birthday, her 80th birthday. Yeah, so it's like we're all a little chinito. You know what I mean? I mean, look at your face. But that's racist. I'm sorry.
It is. It is, Justin. It's very. But there's a lot of lines in the movie. And what are the popular lines? What are the lines that like you guys will tell in, I don't know, like family reunions or whatever? Family reunions. I'm so stupid.
Hey, everybody, gather around. Okay, Brandon, you have Stand and Deliver. I'm going to do My Family, Mi Familia. And
no,
Tito, you do Selena. Yeah. What are the lines? What are the good... You know what? I didn't realize how creepy the movie was at some points. Like, there's, like, strange sexual... Not even innuendos, just, like, very direct things. Like, at the beginning when that girl, Anna, she's very quiet, and he's like... he goes up to her and he's like, is it true that quiet people make better lovers? Like, to a 15-year-old girl? Like, creepazoid. And then what do you say to the other girl?
What?
He said it to the other girl when he calls her out in front of class.
Oh, that she has more dates than Elizabeth Taylor?
Yeah, how does he do it?
That's exactly how he says it. He's like, that girl has more dates than Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
She's like, I don't know.
It's the sentimentalist tool. You see it everywhere.
But then it there's a strange... I mean, I don't want to blame it on the 1980s or I don't know what. But
it still happens today.
But, like, there's also that, like, hetero-flexible punk rock kid, you know? I mean, maybe in my head he's hetero-flexible.
The one with the suede.
Oh, Tito. His name was Tito.
Yeah. And he, you remember when he says that line and then he, like, blows a kiss to Jaime Escalante?
He does it twice.
Yeah. Shout out to all those hetero-flexible punk rockers. I know a few of them. And, yeah.
The jacket. I want that jacket.
Oh, my God. Oh, and he's wearing that jacket. With
Jesus on it.
With
right?
the Jesus. Yeah. I don't remember that because.
Yeah. That's suede paintings,
you
right?
know what's funny is when we were kids, that never stood out to me because there's Jesus shit all over, you know, because we grew up so Christian or whatever.
Yeah.
But now looking at it, that's fucking cool.
Yeah,
it was like.
Jacket was awesome, actually.
Literally like airbrushed or I don't know, hand painted, right? Jesus. With the crown of thorns.
What is the name of that material that they make those paintings that they sell at the swap meet?
Velvet.
Terciopelo. It was a terciopelo Christ painting.
Yeah.
And they play off on that terciopelo. There's one scene, there's a terciopelo painting with lucecitas in the back. So it looks like the town.
Oh,
is
yeah.
lit up.
On, and in Angel's grandma's house.
Yes, that's
there's
right.
all that religious iconography. In all the houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those paintings are, it's like those Elvis paintings of terciopelo that you see everywhere here in the 99 cent stores, but in secondhand stores. One line that I want to talk about, it's when he talks about the cosmetology classes.
Oh, yeah. So what does he say?
So throughout the whole movie, in order to make his point across, he talks about how, oh, you don't want to do this, then you're going to be flipping burgers. Or you don't want to do this, you're going to be frying chicken. You're not going to do this. So almost basically saying, if you don't put effort into this, you're going to end up working in fast food.
And you know what? Shout out to all those people that fry my chicken.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Fried chicken is the fucking shit.
And flipping burgers is essential. So, yes.
I know people that flip burgers that make way more money than I do. So, anyway.
Ay, Dios. Yes, that's true.
In this economy?
It's true.
Okay.
But, so... It's always the same lines, right? It's the chicken, it's the burger, it's the chicken and the burger. And then towards the end of the movie, he kind of tries to make a sexist joke by saying that, oh, so you, I forgot the name of the character that
Angel.
He said to Angel, said, oh, so you're not gonna finish the class. Instead, you decide to go to cosmetology class, to cosmetology school. Almost basically saying, almost making fun of possibly his sexuality.
Yes,
I don't
definitely.
Know. Maybe I'm overreading it, but
no, you weren't. Yeah, yeah, but you know what? That's like,
but it's part of those sexual things that you were talking about. Like, they're there, and maybe in the '80s was more socially acceptable. But if this movie would have come out today, it would have raised more eyebrows, I think.
Or the jokes would have just been smarter. So that
we
wouldn't have caught them.
I don't know. I really want to think we're more enlightened than that, but
no,
I don't think so.
We're not.
No, we're not.
They're still making the same fucking jokes. No matter what.
Gonzalez, Dios mio,
I can't wait for that to come out so we can talk about it.
Nope.
I cannot wait.
I won't watch it. You can tell me all about it.
But you know, I was talking about Speedy Gonzalez, right? Like, I feel like Lou Diamond Phillips watched Speedy Gonzalez movies to learn his Chicano accent. Like, everything that he said, he was like, orale. Like,
te creso mas chingón.
Te creso mas chingón.
You never listen to nobody, man.
And then, you know, this is something that drives me nuts as a consumer of Latino media, you know? Mm. Okay, if James Olmos, right? I don't know you. Sorry, Edward James Olmos. He produced. I think he produced the movie. He was one of the. I mean, it was. I think his project.
Yeah.
Or one of the main people, and so I can comfortably say that, you know, this was made for us because Olmos is he's a really great Chicano figure. You know, like I really respect him and all of his work, and I mean, come on, he played Selena's dad, you know, like, mm-hmm. amazing. But, oh, yeah, what I really hate, what I really don't like is when they make a character Mexican, but then they have, like, a Cuban accent.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
And they let it slide because white people don't know the difference. That like, girl. Like, you would never see a movie that's set in, like, Britain, and then somebody, it's like somebody has a, you know, like...
Irish.
An Irish accent.
Yes.
Like, you would never have somebody in...
It's pan-Latino.
Yeah, isn't it crazy?
It's true.
So, and we, or like we, an American accent.
We
like,
noticed that right away, because in the beginning of the movie, we keep saying... Is she Cuban? Is she Puerto Rican? Is he this?
Yeah,
is
we're like trying to figure it out.
And then that shit is important. Lupe, to us.
The chunky girl. Mm-hmm. In today's standards, that girl looks. She's mm-hmm. skinny. She yeah, is. She's good. She's got the curves and swerves. Mm-hmm. But she's that la gordita.
La gordita. Yeah.
What's the line in the movie?
She's like, oh, I got the same answer as the gordita. Call me gordita, pendejo.
You know it all.
No, they go to her house, and her mom walks in. She's a maid, and she, like, lays on the couch. But then, you see both of her parents, and they're so dark, and she's so light, you know? And but then when she's wrangling the kids, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
She's like, Juanito! Yeah. She's, like, totally, like...
And the mom doesn't have that Cuban accent. Uh-huh.
Mira, Juanito, ven acá, chico! Like, she's all just, like, going out.
Yeah, she's...
And I'm like, that's not a Chicana Mexican accent. She's Cubana, and so is Andy Garcia, right, in the movie? And he speaks Spanish, but he never identifies as a Mexican, though.
No.
But
I think they try to play with that because he gets so mad. Like, how could you accuse me?
That's what I thought. I thought he was playing a white character. In that. Like, yeah. I thought he was a white guy in that movie.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know he was Latino until you said that.
He says something about being from the same barrio, right, in the movie?
I don't remember.
Yeah. But no, that's what he says. Why can you accuse us? See, that's the thing. A black guy. So the investigators in the movie who investigate if the kids were cheating or not is one of them is a black guy, and mm-hmm. one of them is a very light skinned Latino. Yeah, Latino. Yeah. So because he speaks Spanish at some points.
Yeah, and his accent is like better than
yeah
than some of the characters. But anyway.
That's a good question. How can I be racist if I'm a person of color? Like, you can be racist and brown.
Can,
that's very possible. Talk to any
very common
of our family members over 30 years old. Like,
or anybody who works in La Migra.
Oh my god.
Dios mío.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I think I wondered. And one of the things I also wanted to mention is that there was this from the OC Weekly, Arellano, that's his last name, mentioned that there was a golden period or the época de oro of Chicano television and Chicano movies in the 90s. And we had, as you guys mentioned, Mi Familia, Selena, La Bamba. La Bamba, Stand and Deliver, and then Real Women Have Curves. There's all these things happening in the 90s, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden, when was the last thing we got a movie like that?
It's cyclical, dude. That's what RuPaul was saying about, like, all these, like, right now, like, RuPaul's Drag Race is big, you know, there's a lot of trans visibility also. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to lump them together, but no. You know, there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
What's the new word that all you academics are using?
For Latinos?
No, for when there's different levels of
intersectionality.
There's a lot of intersectionality in homo and trans and all that shit, all that media. and it's really strong right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what RuPaul said, is like, we're holding on to that.
As long as we can,
because she knows, because she's been through it. Remember, she was a supermodel of the world.
And then she's gone.
Cut off for like 10 years, and then she came back. So,
you think
it's any moment now, any election now, will end what we're seeing on television. So we got to hold on to it, right? And right now, good point. Right now, what I see happening on television is there's more color on TV, right? Like the Carmichael Show, Fresh Off the Boat, Even watching shows that are made for white people by white people. Uh-huh. No shade to my one of my favorite new shows, Lady Dynamite. Like, yeah. That show's for white people, but they talk about race,
yes,
a lot in the show, and I enjoy it a lot, you know. But I always see people of color in the background, you know, like they're more aware of what's happening.
But I wondered if this awareness is just superficial, like, oh, we have to put somebody of color, but really understanding the importance of diversifying those spaces that are so visible for everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced. I am not convinced of any of these shows at all. And we were talking about how Hollywood is giving us more of the Indian character, meaning from India, than the Latino character, mm-hmm. and you see that in so many shows. And I know there's Cristela.
There was Cristela. They canceled it. We got to do a whole episode on her.
Border Town too, which as problematic as it might have been, it was still a space. You know, it was still something where.
Well, you know what? I'm not gonna. I think for Indian Americans to be, you know, on TV now is great.
No,
too,
it's important.
I don't want to shit on that. But you're right. Like that Aziz.
But we're next door. I'm not competing.
I know. It's not a competition, yeah. But you're right. Like, it's either we have an Indian guy on the show or
Asian.
We have an Asian or we have a Latino.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you can't have all of them.
No.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's too much. Like,
yeah.
Oh, no, then this show is about being colored. Like, we can't have that, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. And so if this is cyclical, was there another cycle of Latinos and Chicanos being popular in media in the States?
Before the 80s?
Yeah, before the 90s, because it really is the 90s. Early 90s, I guess.
I mean, there was the Latin... There in music, the Latino influence was huge starting in the 1960s. So you started seeing this whitewashing of music, like Herb Alpert, whatever, you know, the Tijuana Brass.
Yeah.
Like, you started hearing a lot of Latin beats in music, a lot of crooners and a lot of different people.
And that's interesting because that's from a lot of. That comes from the 40s too.
Yeah,
and
you know Charo, even though she's actually Spanish, uh-huh. We claim her because she's so fucking awesome. But she was part of that movement, right?
Yeah.
And before that, you had Carmen Miranda, you know, like. But that's they were right. All playing these big stereotypes.
They were, yeah. And prior to that, even going a little bit back, like in the 30s and 40s, you had the vogue of anything Mexican. That's where Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo and all of those were coming here to the States and making murals and making art because anything that was Mexican was on fashion.
What was that Disney movie, Los Tres Caballeros?
That was what yeah.
But that was in the 50s or earlier. I don't remember.
So, so it's you're right. I guess it's cyclical. But in the 90s, I think for the first time, it was movies. I don't know the producer, so I need to do more research. But it seemed like it was by brown people. For brown people, by Latinos, for Latinos, instead of having the white perspective or having...
And then there was a resurgence with, like, Ugly Betty. You remember that?
Yeah.
And, like, and what I like about, like, so...
Ooh, have you seen the original one?
Betty La Fea? it's good. It's, like, Argentinian, right?
No, it's Colombiana.
Oh, Colombiana. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's good. It's better.
Oh,
I think it's
better.
So much better.
Because there was also one in a soap opera in Mexico of Betty La Fea, but it was so bad. But the original one, I will laugh out loud all the time.
So let's rewatch that. Yeah, let's go back. We kind of let's go back to Stand and Deliver, and so the movie is about education, right? And how somebody can change the course of someone's life by being a great teacher, change an entire school, right? Which is very important. Jaime Escalante deserves his props. Rest in peace. He unfortunately died of cancer, like in 2010, mm-hmm. which is really sad. But I mean, I remember being here in Las Vegas, you know, in the Southwest, there's a lot of brown kids. And I remember seeing him on TV a lot. Yeah. Like, I think he had a show on PBS or they would at least show us videos of him in like math class, right?
I'm pretty sure it was on PBS.
Yeah, like him teaching algebra. And, I am somebody that's actually really bad at math. And Brandon,
yes,
you too.
Very bad.
So
me too.
It's like, I don't know, like, I feel like this movie should have inspired me to pay more attention. But I don't think I ever had a math teacher that cared, to be honest, in our school. This school district is fucked. Mm-hmm. Like, I still kind of work for them, but for this Clark County School District. But it's awful. Like, I taught math for half of a year. Mm-hmm. Me, that barely passed their proficiency exam.
Uno por uno, uno por dos.
I taught remedial middle school math. And
what does that mean?
Remedial, like all the kids that, remedial is like the lowest. So I was like teaching middle school kids like times tables and like fractions. Yeah. And like some of them didn't even know how to divide. I learned a lot from taking it. Like, because when I was learning, I would go in the morning and like YouTube, like how to multiply fractions. Because I didn't know, girl. I didn't. But the whole time I was like, I'm going to be the Jaime Escalante of the school.
And it was like, a negative times a negative equals a positive.
And their mother and those kids were not having it. So like, and I went to a predominantly brown school.
Yeah.
Like, I think there was one white kid in all six periods, and I had a full classes of like 40 kids each. And
where'd you teach at?
Del H. Robeson. Oh, yeah. In the hood, right?
Yeah.
So on the east side of town, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know how he did it, because that was one of the hardest jobs that I ever had. The hardest thing was actually classroom management,
yeah.
and not teaching. Because once they were paying attention, I could see them kind of learning. And then there was just so many kids, I could tell the one-on-one really helped. And it was nice to see in the movie him kind of becoming the father figure for all of these kids, because their fathers were either shitbags or they didn't have dads, right?
I think they overplayed that in the movie a little bit. Because he was an asshole to his own kids. Like, the way he talked to his kids, but then he would come to the classroom and be like, my baby!
Yeah.
Like, it was a little different.
But, you know, some of them, you know, kids love tough love, you know? And
yeah.
I even got that with my short time at this middle school. I remember they emphasize this when you're training to be a teacher. They're like, don't touch the kids. Don't touch the kids. Don't, like, every other page on the manual is like, don't touch the kids. But sometimes like a pat on the head or the back is like, good job is good.
Yeah,
right.
It means
like
a lot to mm-hmm. a kid. Yeah.
And I remember there was this one kid who would always try to hug me like after I helped him. And I'd always just be like, sorry, I can't touch you. Don't touch me. Don't touch me.
You still do that.
Huh?
Even with grown,
I know. I don't like to be touched. That's why I'm still single. So, but anyway, and that's part of the problem. So like,
you know,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So the school that I went to is also a Teach for America school. Do you know what that is?
Nope.
So Teach for America is this program. I don't exactly know a lot about it, but all I know is that they send all these kids fresh out of college to finish their master's degrees, mm-hmm. they sent them to these at-risk schools, right? So my school was an at-risk school. So what they do is they throw a bunch of money at it, right? They put Teach for America kids in it, and it's all these inexperienced teachers, right? Yeah. There was all these teachers that didn't know that it was their first year's teaching, and
so they're experimenting with kids basically before they
And they make these kids guinea pigs, right? They threw all this money at the school to the point where every kid had an iPad at this school.
Dios
right?
Mia.
Like, free lunch and iPads. Like, what a fucking holiday, right? So, but anyway, that's not what those kids needed, right? Those kids needed teachers with experience, you know, teachers that have been teaching for a long time, and teachers that spoke Spanish. I was one of the only bilingual teachers at
so
that school.
Important.
And I was a guest teacher. I wasn't
that,
even
yeah.
a real, I was a sub.
And they touch upon that in the movie when they have
yeah.
the substitute teacher, and he was an expert in music or something.
Oh yeah,
he was a music teacher.
Yeah, music yeah. teacher, and it shows you some of the failing system. And what I was thinking about watching the movie yesterday too, that the contrast of the education system, like here in Mexico, especially math. I remember learning about that stuff, like algebra, like advanced algebra and calculus and stuff like that, in junior high in Mexico. Like, that's part of the program. Everybody has to learn that stuff. And still after I finished my required courses from college, I still had seen more advanced things in mathematics and in Mexico. But then when it came to the classroom, there was like 55 cabrones in one single classroom in junior high, and it's kind of hard to get that, what you're talking about, that special attention. So, and in terms of the resources, they also talk about the computers. Like, oh, we finally got computers. I remember the last year of junior high in Juarez, and then my first day in high school in El Paso. I remember the junior high in Juarez. We put together a dance so we can get money so we could buy a computer for the secretaries for the whole entire school. And then I arrived to El Paso, and there were 2 computers per classroom. And yet, with all of this resources, there were just a lot of things that seemed very inadequate because I was a nerd. And I paid attention to all of those things, including math. I remember sitting in my math classes in high school and passing me like, ¿qué es esto? Like, it's just, it was too damn easy. I don't know.
B, what about you?
What's that?
I know you don't like school when you were in school. Why? Tell me about it.
I don't know. I was just never really good at it. Not that I wasn't interested in, like, learning. I got distracted really fast, and I don't know. I just really didn't care about it, man.
Do you think that, Escalante teacher would have made a change? Like, do you think you would have listened?
I've had the whole time I was in school, I've only had one great teacher. It was Mr. Kono when I was in third grade.
Derek Kono.
Shout out, Mr. Kono.
Shout out.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that guy was so cool.
Yeah, man, he was.
Why did you like him so much?
Because he would spend like one-on-one time with everybody, you know. And
yeah,
he would like whatever problem that you had, he would make sure, you know, like you need. He'll teach you how to understand better. You know what I mean?
He just took the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there a lot of kids in that classroom?
Yeah, it was probably like 30.
Yeah.
30 kids in that class.
Yeah, I remember that guy, and you know what? He was a young teacher too. I just remember. So not to shit on young teachers, which I did earlier, but because some of the best.
But when you care, no matter what.
Some of the best teachers are the ones that care about you, which is really cool. Yeah. I remember I never thought I was smart until, I thought I was, you know what, I was always lumped with the ESL kids because I spoke Spanish when I was in elementary school.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I was important or could be anything until like fourth grade. I had shout out to Mrs. Ledford. Mrs. Ledford made me the first student of the month in her classroom. Mm-hmm. And I remember she just sat me down and she said, listen, she's like, I just want to thank you so much. Because they would always sit me with all the kids that didn't speak English, mm-hmm. so that I would translate to them. So I was like, I should have been getting paid in elementary school. That's all I'm trying to say. But she said, thank you so much for helping me. It was the first teacher to tell me, because ever since first grade, I've been translating for kids. So she was the first one to say, thank you so much. I just want you to know that you are important. And I was just like, do not compute. What are you saying? I was like, whoa.
This is love. What's happening?
And I remember that changed my life. I was like, oh, cool. And, you know, I was the first student of the month, and I just felt so important in her class. And because of that, I paid attention, and I did well in her class, you know?
Yeah, it's so important. I don't remember having that connection with any of my teachers till I got to my undergrad. I think my first teacher where I really felt like I could do something, and for the first time I really felt identified with what I was learning, was with Professor Perez in UNLV that he still teaches Chicano literature. That class changed my life, but it was because there were 15 of us, because we could get one-on-one with him, and we will always talk about some of the issues that you see in the books, you see in the poetry, and you also see in everyday life. And that was so important. I remember that was the first time I actually had access to study something cultural that wasn't European-based.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it affected me so much that I'm still doing it today, you know?
Yeah.
So it's so important, and that one-on-one is... It's essential. It can change somebody's life. It's just that a lot of people, they just go get their paychecks and adios, a la chingada.
Yeah. It's true. That was me. No, you know, I remember there was this little chubby kid in one of my classes. This is when I was teaching English at that same school. And he was kind of the class clown, mm-hmm. because that was his way of deflecting all the kids making fun of him. Mm-hmm. And I remember, one day the kids kept picking on him, and I always try to like discipline the kids in class, because sending them to the dean's office, getting them suspended, doesn't like do anything. For what?
Yeah.
And that day, the kids broke him. Like he lost it. Like he just started. I could tell in his face, like he was just red. But then the class ahead of him stay after class, and he was like, "Mr. Favela," and he just started crying. And like, shit. "They won't stop making fun of me," and I'm like, "You." There is.
A la esquina, cabrones.
No, I'm just kidding.
Ponte esas orejas.
I just remember telling him, I was like, you know what? You don't need to worry. I said, you are the funniest kid in this class. Like, you're one of the smartest kids in this class. And you know why those kids are picking on you? Because everybody likes you, and because they're not funny. So I'm like, you just keep doing you. Don't worry about what they're saying about you. Who cares? They're going to be in jail anyway. And, you know, and I'm just like, gave a bunch of those little pep talks, because I could see all these kids being made fun of all the time. I could see myself in a lot of those kids. I was mostly just quiet when I was in school, because I didn't want anybody to talk to me.
I was bullied, but in Mexico my experience was like healthy bullying. So one day was all against me, and the next day was all against somebody else. We took turns. So yeah. We had to learn to take it, and that was it. We never took it personal. Well, at least I didn't.
Putazos for progress.
Yes.
Bullying is so important, man. I don't know why there's all these campaigns. No, I'm just kidding.
I get it. It's just there's bullying and there's fucking bullying. It's just
let's talk about your experience, Brandon. You're very quiet over here. Why aren't you talking about your school experience?
Because I hated school.
Man. I know. Why? Tell me.
No. I just didn't like school.
Why?
I hated my teachers.
Why?
I hated kids.
I don't know. You just didn't want to be there? You hated authority.
I just hated authority.
You still hate authority.
Yes.
Let's talk about it.
That hatred for school, you never got flashbacks from the movie and be like, oh shit, maybe I should stay. Oh shit, maybe I should. Or you're like, yeah, whatever, this is not reality.
There was a couple of times where I felt like I tenía que echar ganas, you know, but.
Ganas! Yeah.
Right. But, I don't know, I just flat out did not like school. Like, I don't know.
That's not for everybody, for sure.
It wasn't for you. Just the way the system was, mm-hmm. It wasn't, what's the word, conducive for learning? Whatever. I don't know. I can see that. I remember getting really bored at school, and if I had a different attitude, I would have acted up. But mine was, I would always just butter up the teachers and be a fucking kiss ass, and I didn't have to do shit. And like, to this day, that's my goal. That's my go-to.
That's your philosophy.
No. Yeah, it is. So, yeah, anyways.
Oh, there's one thing I want to touch upon when it comes to the movie. This idea of
talking to the microphone, we're doing a podcast.
This idea about playing with emotion to dismiss like a racial argument.
Because
that's something that I see a lot. I see in the movie, and I see it in everyday life. This idea of mansplaining. Of the fact that there's a little bit of emotion that is perceived by men, then they put their hand and they're like, oh no, like calm down, girl, or you know, you're getting hysterical. But the same thing happens when it comes to understanding or talking about race. And it happens in the movie. In that scene, we keep coming back to it, where you have the people that are reviewing the text.
Yeah, and he was like, if this was Beverly Hills High School, this wouldn't have been the case.
And their response, instead of getting into like a healthy, good argument about race, because it could have been good, it was like, cálmese, señor. Like, you need to calm down right now.
Your emotions are taking over.
Yes, or I'm going to call security. And that's a way to completely dismiss this the possibility of an important argument, this idea of highlighting the aggressor's emotion, if you want to call it like that. And I don't know, like I saw that and I kept thinking about it because it happens. You see it in TV, you see it in everyday life. And I just want to know if you guys experience anything like that where somebody uses emotion to dismiss somebody else or...
Yeah, you know, like a lot of times that's what's... I see that a lot for women. Like mm-hmm. if women get upset and they start crying and they're... Like Brandon and I were just talking today, like when you know... Like, women are more expressive, right? So mm-hmm. they'll start crying. And, you know, one response that I could have had to you when you were saying that, Brandon, was, I know, right? They're, you know, like, the regular bro thing, like, yeah, man, these bitches be crying all the time, blah, blah, blah. But what did I tell you? I was like, ay, qué rico. I wish I could cry like that, you know? Mm-hmm. I wish I could let that emotion out. Imagine how it would feel. You know, so it's just like a different mindset, right? Because I'm already, I've seen it happen for so many times, like men, of course, but especially women, are don't cry or don't get mad or don't yell, don't get angry, because, you know, if a white person is yelling, he's passionate, right? Like, he's making a point. If a black woman is yelling or a black person or any person of color is yelling, oh my gosh, they need to be controlled. Like they're outraged. Like their emotions have taken over. You know, and I've seen that time. And time again.
You see it in conferences.
All the time.
You see it in
And I've seen myself checking myself, like when I'm getting loud and when I'm getting angry. Like you don't see me angry that much. I internalize it a lot. That's why I have heartburn. But and the hot Cheetos. But I'm making a conscious effort to let my feelings out verbally now, just because it's fucked up to keep them inside you.
Yeah.
And that's why...
It's unhealthy.
It's very unhealthy. And that's why a lot of brown people... I mean, just from my experience, a lot of people we know have problems with addiction, have problems with marriage, have problem with family relationships, friends relationships, because they just bottle everything in. Mm-hmm. And then we snap and we just start fucking shit up, like... Literally.
You see it in academia when somebody presents a paper of a person of color and they start getting a little bit of... Because after you present a paper, then you have like, I don't know, 15 minutes of a Q&A. And that's where the true colors of people come out. And it happens a lot. It happens a lot when they start getting a little bit emotional. And years of research could be completely dismissed just because... we show a little bit of emotion.
Yeah.
So, and it's a question. Do I stop myself from this emotion so I can make my point across with this predominantly white audience? Or do, as a sign of protest, I'm just going to be whoever the fuck I want to be and express what I'm saying. It's I don't know. It's a thing to think about.
Yeah. Definitely. That's what, yeah. Oof, I was going to talk about Maya Angelou, but I'm not equipped to talk about her.
Good.
I'm just going to, yeah, you know, just like because her tone was very, I feel like Maya Angelou's, this is all I'll say. I think that her voice, like literally her voice, was very grounded
mm-hmm.
and like stable. And
which
I think,
is also refreshing.
Which is refreshing. Yeah. And yeah. I think that's why.
Who is she?
Maya Angelou. She was a poet, an author. Okay. She just passed away. Yeah, she was, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. She's very, very, there's this awesome, I'm going to show it to you. There's this awesome YouTube video now that it's called Iconoclast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where two icons interview each other. And Maya Angelou interviews Dave Chappelle. And interviews her.
Cool.
Oh my God, it's fucking powerful. Like, I'll introduce you to her that way. She's amazing. And you know Dave Chappelle, he's also brilliant and messed up now because of how white people have fucked with him. But
y drogas.
I know. Anyway, man, so much.
I want to come back to this to this topic because now my mind is unraveling about this idea of dismissing somebody's incredibly important argument through just by showing a little bit of emotion. But anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, you know, it's about that time. It's been a good time. Thanks for the sandwich, Emmanuel. I really appreciate it.
De nada.
Babelito, sorry. I keep calling you the wrong. Now we like to take a little time in the show and recommend a few things that, like, we're really into, like an album that you just listened to or a podcast or a book that you just read or whatever. And I'm going to take a moment, and we've been talking a lot about, you know, L.A., Chicanos in L.A., especially with this movie. So I want to recommend this podcast that I listen to. It's actually like it's a music podcast. If you guys want to learn about new stuff that's coming out, there's this really great one that I've mentioned before on the podcast called it's called Alt Latino, A-L-T Latino. And they do some throwbacks, but mostly, you know, it's like the new up-and-coming music in the Latino world. But then there's this other guy. His name is Chicano Drew. He has this awesome podcast called Drifting on a Memory. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, what's up? It's Chicano Drew. He's so cool.
On the road, I remember
it's a perfect like road trip music. Like, and so, yeah, he'll do a bunch of throwbacks, old school songs. He has different themes every time he comes out. I think it's like every week, every other week, he'll come out with a new mix of music. So that's my recommendation. I love that podcast.
Well, if we're going on this route of music, I don't know podcasts about music, but the best blog about music of independent Latino music, and when I say Latino, I mean everything: Puerto Rico, Chile, Argentina, Bolivia, Peru. It's called Club Fonograma. Uh-huh. Club Fonograma. And it's this, I think it's some Chicano kids from Phoenix. And they started talking about a couple of their favorite indie bands in Mexico and Chile, because there was an explosion of Chilean pop a couple of years ago, and it's still happening. Mm-hmm. And now they're kind of like the pitchfork for Latin Americans in the States. And
what is it called again?
It's called Club Fonograma or Club Fonograma. I will put the...
.com?
Yes, .com.
Cool.
And... Sometimes for like a month or two you don't see anything, but when they go on it and they review the albums, I always come out with a new album from their website. So check it out. It's awesome.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Brandon, you have any recommendations?
Yeah, I recommend you guys watch Mi Familia.
Who's in that movie again?
Edward James Olmos. Jacob Vargas.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Lopez.
J-Lo
she is.
Yeah, she's the mom. She's the. She plays.
Oh
the young
my
mom.
God! You're right.
Yeah. We have to rewatch
the
movie.
They use the same people in every damn movie. Is Lou Diamond Phillips in it?
No,
he's in it. Watch. No, he's like in the background, like
serving tacos or something.
Yeah, Mi Familia, my family. When that came out later though, right? Like late 90s.
Yeah, it was 90s.
Yeah, that's a good movie. Yeah, we're gonna have to watch that. Maybe talk about that movie too, because. Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing it. There's like a wedding involved, mm-hmm. right? But I don't remember the full thing. Cool. Well, this has been another episode of Latinos Who Lunch. And again, if we talked about something, especially the recommendations, and you didn't have time to write them down right now, we have all the links on our website, latinoswholunch.com, right underneath the episode guide there. And you can find us also on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, iTunes,
damn,
SoundCloud.
You're on
I
it.
Got this shit on lock, on boy. Yep, at Latinos Who Lunch.
Stitcher,
yeah. Stitcher's a great way to listen to podcasts. I really like Stitcher because it doesn't actually download the podcast on your phone, so it doesn't take up space. It just streams it, like, and if you have internet.
That's how I got into podcasts.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to them until I downloaded Stitcher, and they were there.
Remember to subscribe on iTunes if you can, and rate and review us there, because they're like the main home for a lot of these podcasts.
Yes.
And it'll give us more ratings. Maybe someday, somehow... we can actually like make some money so we don't lose money making this damn podcast.
Buying all these sandwiches.
No,
that's okay.
Food sponsors, we're looking for you. We're looking for you. Yep, and I'm at Favi Fav on all social media platforms,
and I'm at Babelito at Instagram.
Brandon, can anybody find you online? Or are you still hiding from the Authorities.
Still hiding from authorities.
You're still hiding from the authorities. Maybe next time he's on, he'll have a social media tag. But thank you guys for listening. Bye.
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 All right, good. Ooh. You're so nervous, Brandon. No, it's okay. You'll get better every time you do it.
I like how you just keep coming back with a light in the movie. Like,
that was good. That was good.